Well, Rick, we want to keep the spotlight today on the Comprehensive Pensacola Metro Education Report produced by you and your staff at the Studer Community Institute. Part one of your three-part series focuses primarily on 15 years of FCAT data, and you have your second installment coming out this Sunday. Give us an overview.
It's a six-page insert. It'll be in the Pensacola News Journal on Sunday, as you say, and it's all about education really from the perspective of what works. And so there are articles in there looking at an example of a school in North Charleston that has a high percentage of free and reduced lunch kids who traditionally didn't score well in the standardized testing that determines school scores there in South Carolina. Reggie Dogan's done a really nice job putting together the story about how motivated educators, teachers, and a special principal can make a big difference in that school. And the other stories that are in there are kind of in the same vein. What works? There's a story about a super young man, Darius Hall, that Molly Barrows has written. And then West Florida High School features in there as Escambia County's shining star in terms of high schools, scoring A's consistently in the rankings over the year. And William Rabb has put that story together and discussed the ways that the curriculum just works and what has to be done to get us to such a powerful set of results.
Now, Charleston, South Carolina was chosen because it is similar to Pensacola in its size and demographics, right?
It is. It's a coastal community, a lot of tourism activity there. So it has a similar structure and similar pattern to economic activity here in Pensacola. So often we do look at Charleston as a city against which to benchmark, and so they've done some neat things. Not only do they have one of the most effective, longest serving mayors in the United States, or they had for many years, but also they seem to be doing some things right in education. So it was certainly worth a close look, and that's what we've got this weekend in the special insert.
Well, Rick, we don't want to give it all away, but can you give us some detail of some of the changes that were made that contributed to Charleston's or this school district's success?
Sure. They looked to longevity and commitment in the institutional staff. It really takes someone special on a mission to help make that school better. And so the story goes on to describe some of the changes that were implemented by that principal, the way that he motivates not just teachers, but actually knows the kids and understands how to meet them where they are, even if they're living in the back of a car or sleeping on the floor or need lunch. Then that school and its leaders have become very adept at addressing the individual needs of all those kids. And so the test scores show it. They've moved up in their scores. They're advancing up the ranks. Still a long way to go before they hit high achieving status, but clearly they're making a difference.
And you say locally, West Florida High School here in Pensacola is making a difference with its industry certification program. One example of success here.
It's a different approach from the traditional college and university preparatory curriculum, but out there at West Florida High School, and kudos to Tommy Tate, the story mentions that it was about 18 years ago when he and the Pensacola Chamber and others got together and started exploring possibilities with the school district of establishing the West Florida High School for Advanced Technology. And then the story goes on to describe how they meet the challenges of both providing a career-oriented workforce kind of curriculum with the requirements of the very demanding and kind of highly structured Florida requirements for what that curriculum has to look like. How can you teach algebra in a workforce prep sort of course so that then kids can go and pass the algebra component of the required exams? And they've done a great job of that there. And so the story goes into some detail about what those innovations are, how the students respond to them, what the teachers think about them. So it's a nice piece of work by William Rabb.
And of course, Rick, our own Senator Don Gates has been at the forefront of moving forward with this type of educational requirement in the state.
That's true. And you know, we've got programs. Escambia International Baccalaureate Program is one of the largest in the nation, and they have a very well-developed university prep curriculum. The honors programs at our high schools around the area with AP and honors courses do a super job of university prep. But what astonished me when I started looking at education numbers in a serious way, gosh, a dozen years ago or more, was kind of the disconnect. The number of kids that finish a four-year degree in a timely fashion in the state of Florida is actually very low. And that's a surprise to parents. You know, everybody wants a university prep curriculum for their kid because their child is going to go to college. But what inevitably happens, or often happens, is that whether it's because of motivational issues, that the youngster's not ready for college, whether it's because of financial issues, or whether the curriculum just doesn't reach the kids, there's lots of reasons that actually people who finish in a timely fashion are in a minority. And so the way to address this, a number of different ways, but one of the most effective is to prepare students for opportunities that don't necessarily call for the traditional university preparatory curriculum. And I think this the article does a super job of explaining what that looks like and why it works. So overall, it's a super issue. I forgot to mention, I have an article in there as well, looking at the relationship between educational outcomes, income, and wealth in the United States. And so I think it's a good read overall.
All right, we'll look forward to that. And of course, you have one final report in the series that will come out the next weekend, and that will focus on the importance of early childhood education.
Exactly. Early learning, reading, just the very high importance of parental engagement before age three in order to try and make every child a reader and enable every child to be successful.
All right, Rick, we will hold it there. Thanks.
Thank you, Sandra.
You can hear the Economic Report Fridays. I'm Sandra Averhart, WUWF News.